This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 31st of January 2020. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 31st of January, which this week have been edited by Sonia Phillips, Jane Pickard and Sheila Shepherd. Your readers today are Deborah Cranmer.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. Now, the main headlines this week are Holocaust Memorial Day, observed with service in city, admission charges at two city museums, and historic firm is to say it with flowers. So may we have the first story, please, Deborah?
Yes, this is Holocaust Memorial Day, observed with service in city. And at the head of the article is a photograph of the county councillors and members of the Jewish community, together with the dean of the cathedral, standing in the Great Hall underneath the Arthur's Round Table. It has been 75 years since the liberation of Auschwitz. Members of Hampshire County Council paid their respects for Holocaust Memorial Day on Tuesday, writes Sam Hatherley. Staff, councillors and community faith leaders gathered in Winchester's Great Hall to commemorate the 75th anniversary of the liberation of the Nazi concentration camp Auschwitz. And there is a photograph of the famous gateway with Arbeit macht frei over the gate. The event also remembered the 25th anniversary of the Srebrenica massacre during the Bosnian conflict, when Serbian forces murdered around 15,000 Muslims. Danny Habel, who represents the Jewish faith on SACRE, Hampshire Standing Committee for Religious Education, and whose own family were directly affected by the Holocaust, spoke to the crowd. Members of his family in Germany perished in the Holocaust. He said, "You, the people who are the council, are in the position to spot and prevent any sort of discrimination, no matter the scale. The Holocaust, it's not a Jewish point in history. It's a world point in history, and we must all learn from what happened." Former County Councillor Michael Zeffert, a member of the Portsmouth and Southsea Synagogue, recited a prayer, followed by a performance by the Hampshire Music Service. The Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, Dean of Winchester, then read a prayer which had been put together for the anniversary. "As leader of Hampshire County Council," said Councillor Kenneth Manns, "I'm extremely proud of this authority's work over the years with partners to tackle hate crime, and through our education services and community work to promote inclusion and foster respect and understanding between different faiths and cultures. I have no doubt that Hampshire is a richer and better place because of its diversity. Respecting difference and valuing diversity are behaviours that can never be taken for granted." Throughout the day, the County Council's flag at its Winchester headquarters had been at half-mast, out of respect for the victims of the Holocaust and more recent genocides.
Let's have the second headline, please, Noel.
Yes, admission charges at two city museums. Two free-to-enter attractions in Winchester are set to start charging admission fees. City Museum and the Westgate, both operated by Hampshire Cultural Trust, will introduce a ticketing system from March the 31st. The Trust plans to use the additional money to fund staffing and put on a programme of events reflecting the city's heritage, including period music, family activities and reenactments. CEO Paul Sapwell, who has been in his post since 2018, told the Chronicle, "I'd be a liar if I wasn't expecting a decrease in visitor numbers, but I don't think there will be enormous consequences. We expect a short-term drop, similar to what happened when the Great Hall started charging, But that has built its numbers back up since, and I'm confident it'll happen in this case. This is a programme that we feel we must put on, something valuable and unique to the city, but we can't do that on the funds we have now. Very few city attractions are still free. An adult ticket to the City Museum will cost £5 and £3 for the Westgate. Concessions will be available for children and family tickets are to be offered. Under fives go free at both. Each ticket will be valid for 12 months and the holder will be able to use it as many times as they please. We've had a £3 suggested donation in place for a while, but we can't provide quality to our best potential through donations alone, added Mr. Sapwell. Around £150,000 has been invested into the City Museum over the last 2 years, and it's undoubtedly better now. But it's not like for like, so the admission price will not be like for like. What I can promise is that people will be paying for good value. A huge percentage of visitors to the City Museum are tourists, and they will be expecting to pay to get into attractions anyway. Mr. Sapwell was unaware whether the two museums have charged entry fees in the past. It's believed charging was tried and then dropped at the City Museum after visitor numbers dropped. City Museum features dozens of displays, models and hands-on activities about Winchester's past, including sections dedicated to Jane Austen and King Alfred the Great. The Westgate used to be a debtor's prison.
And the third headline story, please, Jane.
And that is, historic firm is to say it with flowers. Hampshire horticultural business Hillier Nurseries is to bid for its 75th consecutive gold medal at the RHS Chelsea Flower Show with a celebration of its 155-year history. This year's Stiel Hillier Garden will be an immersive walk-through, 85% bigger than its 2019 exhibit. Romsey headquartered Hillier holds the record for the most consecutive gold medals at the nation's top horticultural show, which runs from May the 19th to the 23rd. Visitors to the exhibit will approach via a replica of the original Hillier shop in Winchester, which was bought in 1864. They will be transported back to the company's beginnings in a single florist shop and a small patch of nursery land. Beyond the shop, visitors will discover a large warden with a stone-walled walkway taking them onto a journey through semi-mature trees, large shrubs and colourful herbaceous planting schemes. The walkway will end at a water feature. Lily Gom will join the team as designer for the second year running. She made her Chelsea debut with Hillier in 2019, winning gold. She said, "It is an absolute honour to be working with Hillier again, particularly this year as the company celebrates its history with its exhibit. The design this year is intended to capture the essence of Hillier, stand out and be memorable at the same time as featuring the detailed, stunning planting and variety that Hillier is known for. The garden will feature 21 mature trees, as well as many of the plants grown on the Hampshire Nursery and available in its 17 Hillier garden centres, which include branches at Winchester and Three Legged Cross. Chris Francis, Director of Retail and Wholesale, said, "This garden recognises and celebrates something incredibly special, so it's only fitting that we have our greatest exhibit ever. We are thrilled to be working with Lily again. She's immensely talented and created a stunning garden for us last year. This year's design is incredible. The idea of recreating the original shop front is certainly going to be remarkable, and I know real detail to attention is being paid. We can't wait to see it all come to life." The Hillier exhibition is sponsored by power tool manufacturer Stiel. Simon Hewitt, head of marketing for Stiel GB, said, "The Hillier designs wow us every year, yet each time we seem to create something even more spectacular and breathtaking. With the huge space and shopfront recreation, not to mention the planting and horticultural expertise, we have no doubts that this year's garden will be the best ever. We are thrilled to sponsor it and to be working with Hillier to once again create one of the biggest talking points of the show. And this is accompanied by a wonderful old photograph of the very shop front they were talking about for the flower show, which is 95 High Street, where it was based from 1883. And this lovely old photograph shows the large window full of pots of flowers and climbers and boxes of mixed flowers and big shrubs and sacks and a delightful-looking shop manager standing in the doorway with his central parting and very neat hair and a very small moustache and white shirt under a tweed waistcoat with a long, I'm sure, green apron going down to his feet.
And that concludes our headline stories. And we're going to continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, question and answer my Winchester, editorial comment, first person and Belgarum diary. And we'll end with items of general news. And I'll start with the death notices. Bryant, Roy Bryant, recently of Brackley, North Hants, at home aged 76. Coleman, Alan John Coleman, formerly of Lower Norton Farm, Sutton Scotney, peacefully at home aged 81. Hatch, Brenda Hatch, suddenly aged 87. Lynch, Morris Peter Lynch, peacefully in hospital. Oliver, Major Edward Collin, retired Oliver, peacefully in his sleep, aged 88. Reynolds, Roy Ernest Reynolds, at home surrounded by his family, aged 84. Wilkinson, Margaret Nay Lenham Wilkinson, at the St. Cross Grange care home, aged 97. And finally, Wright, Anthea Wright, peacefully at the Grange care home, Littleport, Cambridgeshire, aged 82. And now Deborah's got Christian comment.
And this week it's offered by Philip Crinks, and it's entitled Shining Light. If you've gone into a church in England on this weekend in the Middle Ages, you'd have seen thousands of candles. The second day in February was known as Candlemas. It was the time when all the candles to be used during the year were brought in and blessed. In those centuries, candles were the main, if not the only, way to shed light in the darkness. People associated the lighting of candles with a spiritual light which comes from recognising the presence of God in the world. The 2nd of February was chosen for the blessing of candles because it is the 40th day after Christmas. St. Luke, in his Life of Jesus, tells us that Mary and Joseph obeyed the custom of the Jewish law. On the 40th day after his birth, they took him to the temple and offered a sacrifice to give thanks for his safe delivery and the health of Mary. When the baby Jesus is brought into the temple, the old man, Simeon, utters words which have echoed down the centuries. My eyes have seen salvation, a light to lighten the nations. Nowadays, we are more likely to associate shedding light in darkness with the flicking of a switch than with melting wax. But light shining in darkness is no less powerful a spiritual symbol. It is the candle in the wind, which, although it in the end blows out, still represents a timeless meaning. It is the light of human hope, which the darkness cannot overcome. Light is, however, an ambiguous thing. We all have things we prefer to remain in darkness. We don't find it easy to let it shine in the dark places of our own lives. That is true as individuals in our personal lives. It is also true in our institutions and shared public life, and even in our churches. When the light shines, that which was hidden is revealed. The result can surprise us positively, but it can also be a fearful shock. It takes courage and faith to let light shine in the dark places of our lives, on broken relationships, on deep-rooted fears, on falsehoods which we cling to about ourselves and others. It takes courage and faith to let light shine in our communities locally, nationally and internationally, in prison cells, in homes and workplaces where violence, fear and abuse of power displaced love and trust, on refugee camps, in depressed estates where hope seems far off. Simeon sees that Jesus has come to flood our lives with light. He sees then, when the light of Christ shines, it is for healing and peace and safety. He sees that if we play our part, the power of darkness and death will be destroyed, and we who are trapped in darkness will be freed. A glory dawns in every dark place, the light of Christ, the fullness of grace. And that was written by Reverend Philip Crinks, who is priest in charge of St Faith's Parish at St Cross in Winchester.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. Now, there are 7 letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
Yes, this is a heartfelt thanks from Mandy and James McInnes. Excuse me. Sir, last Tuesday, 21st of January, whilst driving along the B3047 through Itchen Abbas, our car skidded on black ice and turned over onto its side. My husband and I would like to thank all those who stopped to help, removing us from the vehicle, phoning the emergency services and stopping the traffic. Many thanks to one and all for their generous help and time. Mandy and James McInnes, Priorsdean Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
And a letter yet again from Keith Webb, saying, strong message. Sir, Nick Ray's response to my comments on Steve Brine's choice of tie at the election count seemed to have led Nick to far-fetched flights of fancy that were never for one moment in my thoughts. Few wear ties at all these days, in my case normally only for weddings, funerals and British-Korean veterans events. Choice of dress in others is not something I comment on. Ties, however, still send out strong messages. Black for funerals, club or regimental to show pride in membership of an organisation, but a bright red tie is seen by most as an indication of strong political leanings. For our Member of Parliament not to know this seems extraordinary and indicates to me that he was trying to send out a message. It may, of course, be that he only had one non-soup-stained tie available, but surely better tie-less than red. And why did he have one in his wardrobe anyway? For years, I have hoped that our local Conservative Party could become more inclusive and recognise that modern political views do not relate to social position or income. The choice of the words blue collar was perhaps rather outdated. My 10 years of army service and the many years that I and my family have been employers in Winchester have given me the opportunity to hear a wider range of views than perhaps the ladies who lunch or have coffee mornings. They, in my eyes, have always been far too influential behind the political scenes. And that was from Keith Webb of Quarry Road, St Giles's Hill, Winchester. And referring to that letter, perhaps he doesn't know that red is also the official tie of St John's College, Cambridge.
And the next letter is from Martin Holmes. Sir, in his first letter from Westminster since being re-elected, Steve Brine attempts to paint a positive picture of the provision of NHS hospital services in Hampshire. From the Hampshire Chronicle, January 23rd. 3 pages later, you report that the Hampshire Hospitals NHS Trust is falling well short of the NHS's 18-week target for the start of non-urgent treatment, with the latest figures showing that over 6,000 patients had been waiting longer. Clearly, there are important developments going on at our hospitals, some of which have courted considerable controversy in your own pages, and credit is due to all hard-working hospital staff. But rather than swanning around the RHCH and Southampton General and cozying up to his old boss, Matt Hancock, Mr. Brine would do more good for his constituents if he spent his time lobbying the government hard for additional resources, especially staff now. Mr. Brine was a member of government of a government that for 10 years underfunded the NHS. To now suggest that the RHCH has been allocated significant investment under the Health Infrastructure Plan is misleading. The Hampshire Hospitals NHS Trust is one of 21 trusts that have been allocated a total of £100 million of seed funding to develop business cases for 34 upgrades and new builds in the period 2025 to 2030. The seed funding for Hampshire is to be split between the RHCH and the Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital. Whether or not the government will commit to projects in due course remains to be seen. And whatever the outcome, this initiative will not address the current everyday resources issues in our hospitals. It is, of course, essential that hospital facilities are modernised and developed to keep pace with advances in technology and treatments and to meet the needs of a growing and ageing population. But it is also essential that the day-to-day operations of the health service are properly resourced now to ensure that the most effective use is made of existing facilities. And that was from Martin Holmes of Culverwell Gardens, Winchester.
And Mrs. U.M. Stevens brings us back to the really important topic of Mr. Brine's choice of clothing. The letter is headed Dreams Ended. Sir, I'm heartened to hear of all the support that our MP, Steve Brine, received after the death of his father. I'm sure I'm far from alone in having had to return to work immediately after the death of a dearly loved parent. Many years ago, I remember clearly how the support I received from other family members, our vicar, friends and colleagues was deeply valued. Notwithstanding, it was unfortunate that Mr. Brine ended his letter with a totally inappropriate reference to his boxer shorts. Perhaps Mr. Brine's choice of a red tie was a calculated attempt to create empty tittle-tattle and thus deflect attention from the fact that he is compelled to vote against his better judgment for the most disastrous decision that his country has ever made. Blue is the colour of the moment. Our illustrious Prime Minister is holed up in a blue funk about how to deliver Brexit, whatever that may mean. He talks big, but his photocopy of the EU withdrawal agreement reveals where the power lies. Our sovereign parliament has been sidelined. All it can do is to rubber stamp the decisions of the Bullington Club bully that is our PM. Mr. Johnson's chosen members of the cabinet are similarly frit, as they will now be marked out of 10 by the blue bully boy to determine their survival or not. Dominating it all is the strangely dressed and strangely behaving blue court jester, a.k.a. Dominic Cummings, whose sensational utterances are sprinkled with grains of truth that none else can speak. A pantomime that the world regards with amusement and contempt. The Union Jack and the EU flag share a blue background. The UK's yellow star will be extinguished as we leave at the end of this month, extinguishing the hopes and dreams of so many of our young people. What about our Union Jack? Up in blue smoke as the Scottish people redouble their efforts to leave and Northern Ireland moves ever closer to the Republic. Mrs. U.M. Stevens, Cliffway, Compton.
And this letter from Dinah Ashcroft is, "Will bells herald a clangor?" Sir, with reference to last week's letter Big Bong, whose author suggests a celebratory bell ringing on January the 31st, I am put in mind of the words of Sir Robert Walpole, "They now ring the bells, soon they will wring their hands." He said this at the beginning of the farcical War of Jenkins' Ear in 1739. This conflict against Spain was at first greeted with much enthusiasm by the misguided population, who over the subsequent years until 1748 suffered heavy taxes and other economic hardships for no useful purpose. Will Brexit turn out to be a clangor too? And that was from Dinah Ashcroft, West Street, Alsford.
And the next letter is entitled England Unite, and it's from Mark Rowe. Sir, I write to you as local branch chairman of the English Democrats to encourage people to come and join us. We, the English Democrats, wish for a voice for England in the form of an English Parliament. Me, myself, would love to see this in the Great Hall of Winchester, as Winchester is England's ancient capital and should for part of its rebirth as a nation. As part of building this rebirth, we, the English Democrats, will be canvassing more than ever in Winchester over the next 5 years. In February, we will be having a branch meeting, of which we unveil a major green project that could change Winchester forever and be used as an example to the world. How we would deal with immigration that would add to Winchester's rich tapestry of cultures, of who make Winchester a fantastic place to live. Also, how we would tackle homelessness and new development. We also unveil our campaign for the next 5 years and looking to bring in new members. Everyone will be welcome to the meeting, and we will give Hampshire's major newspaper, the Hampshire Chronicle, exclusive right to any project of ours. If you would like to know more about the English Democrats, feel free to look at our website and view our Facebook group, Winchester English Democrats, and its supporters. Remember, no matter who you are England, and England is you. God bless the Queen and St George. Mark Rowe, Branch Chairman, Winchester English Democrats, Taplings Close, Winchester.
And Mr. C. E. Patchell writes another letter about Boris Johnson, not exactly a fan letter. It's headed Lacklustre. Sir, there's been comment recently as to whether the MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford should have been selected as the Conservative candidate for the recent general election and their subsequent lacklustre campaign. Can I suggest that if the selection of Mr. Bryan is questioned, then the same could apply to Uxbridge and South Ryslip with respect to the PM? I would point out that he is a hypocrite, because he voted against Mrs. May's government whilst remaining a member of the Conservative Party, yet when people voted against his government, they were expelled, and ultimately only those not perceived to be a challenge to his authority were reinstated. Also, his election slogan was "Let's get Brexit done," yet if it had not been for him and his Brexiteer cronies, we would have left the EU months ago. A serial womaniser, some would say adulterer, having set up home at number 10 with his latest girlfriend while still married to his second wife, and having, not that long ago, been pursued through the media by a previous female acquaintance. Full of bluff and bluster in proclaiming the merits of his withdrawal agreement with the EU, ignoring that it reportedly contains 95% of that negotiated by Mrs. May, and not being able to explain, when asked to do so, how his proposals replaced the backstop would work. Also claiming that the threshold for paying national insurance would be raised to £12,500, only for the announcement to be immediately clarified as an aspiration, with the threshold to be raised to £9,500 in an initial Conservative budget. A scruffy disgrace, as demonstrated by his attendance at the Cenotaph last November for the service of remembrance, when he could not be bothered to button up his jacket and overcoat. When asked why he had not been questioned by Mr. Neil, Mr. Johnson replied that he was waiting to be told what to do, so we do not have someone with his own mind. So was the drastic reduction in the Conservative majority down to dissatisfaction with the record of Mr. Bryan, or people disenchanted with the PM? As for Mr. Bryan's lacklustre election campaign, this can be explained by his having to cope with his father being terminally ill, and in fact dying a few days after the election. Travelling to visit his father was more important than knocking on doors. Mr. C. E. Patchell, Cathedral View, Highcliffe, Winchester.
And that was the last letter to the editor. Thank you to all of the contributors. Now it's time for your say. The coronavirus has killed more than 200 people in China. Are you worried? We asked people what they thought, and Jane's got the answers.
Well, Ben Bevan, 64, retired head teacher of Monk's Road Hyde, says, "It's inevitable. When I was over there 2 years ago, some of the things being sold on the street markets were not hygienic." And Michael Morris, 73, retired, also of Monk's Road. "Well, I'm concerned, but I'm also pleased China is taking it much more seriously than they have in previous similar incidents." And Tony Cantalo, 71, retired NHS worker of Gordon Road, Hyde. Well, I'm more worried that it's being overstated in the media, but I suppose it's sensible to take precaution. And Adam Watts, 36, IT worker of Shepherd's Road, Winnall. It's one of those things that are out of our power over here. We'll just have to wait, watch and act if necessary.
We're going back through the mists of time now for historical news items from our dusty old files, starting with 25 years ago, read by Deborah.
And that was Friday, January the 27th, 1995. Increases in car parking charges in Winchester came under fire at Monday's meeting of the Traffic and Engineering Committee. Frank Clough said the city would be cutting its own throat by imposing the increases. No wonder people are going to Hedge End to shop where car parking is free, he said. Major Douglas Covell said the increases were totally wrong. I see the increases will be in the region of 25%, he said. With inflation being what it is, I think this is grossly unfair. The new charges raise the all-day parking fee and the season ticket charge in some long-stay car parks to bring the parking fees in the Friarsgate multi-storey into line with the other car parks in the city. City engineer David Marklew said an £80,000 rise in income from parking fees would balance the parking account and the committee's budget. It would also contribute to the city's shop mobility costs. He said that parking charges for 1 and 2 hours have remained the same since 1992. Charges for 3 to 4 hours were last increased in April 1993. Long stay charges at Worthy Lane and Chesil were last increased in October 1994. And season ticket charges were increased in October 93 and 94. And there is a second item here about schools. Hampshire schools could be faced with the agonising prospect of axing teachers and increasing class sizes after their budgets were cut by the County Education Committee on Thursday. Liberal Democrat and Labour councillors voted through a £7.7 million cuts package at Tuesday's County Council meeting, protesting they had no choice to do otherwise after reductions in Hampshire's Whitehall grant. They bitterly attacked John Major's government for forcing them to make the cuts. The cuts package includes over £4 million taken from school budgets and £2 million each taken from subsidised pupil stroke student travel and discretionary grants. The school meal service will also lose £740,000. Claiming that their cuts package was a damage limitation exercise designed to stave off even worse cuts in the budget of the county's schools, the Democrat Labour Council leadership also had to fight off another set of spending proposal by the Conservative group, the Tories' first alternative budget since losing power almost 2 years ago. County Education Officer Peter Coles reported that £7.7 million represented the Education Committee's share of the £20 million cuts figure already approved by the Council.
Let's go back 50 years now, please, Noel.
Two items from Saturday, January the 31st, 1970. The first item, a rent increase of up to 30%, for 3,600 Winchester Rural District Council tenants will not now come into effect. The increase, scheduled for June the 29th, has been postponed in the light of a greatly improved financial position. Instead, council tenants will have to pay a shilling more, 7 shillings and 6 pence, for the weekly use of their garages. The postponement has been possible, the council said, because last year's rent increase had not been accompanied by a similar rise in claims for rent rebates. This year's increase had been planned as part of the council's rent rebate scheme. Under this scheme, started in 1967, over £1 is paid in rebates to about 400 tenants each week. And the second item, if the form and character of the present cities and towns within the South Hampshire plan area is to be substantially retained, some limit to the use of the private motor car will be necessary. This is one of the conclusions reached in Urban Form, a study report issued this week by the Plan Advisory Committee. consequently an effective and attractive public transport system forming part of an overall plan for movement of people and goods would be necessary, the report adds. Two main elements of urban form, the report explains, are seen to be the nodes, the concentration of activities such as shopping centres, and the networks, the roads, railways, footpaths and drainage systems serving them.
Jane's going to take us back 100 years now.
And two little items for 100 years ago, which was Saturday, January the 31st, 1920. First, the annual prize giving in connection with Perrin's Grammar School, Alsford, postponed from December owing to an outbreak of infectious disease in the neighbourhood, was held on Wednesday afternoon. The chairman, opening the proceedings, remarked that owing to the prevalence of influenza in 1918 and chickenpox in 1919, the school had had to be closed. This was therefore the first prize-giving ceremony since the termination of the war. And secondly, on Friday, the Hursley hounds had a capital long hunt. The meet was at Baddersley and there was a large field out. No fox was forthcoming at Hocum, but a substitute from Snowdon's provided a goer.
Finally, Deborah's going to take us back 200 years.
And that was to Monday, January the 31st, 1820. We are extremely sorry to learn that the Prince Regent has been confined to his room nearly the whole of the week by prevailing severe catarrh of the season. But we are happy to be enabled to state that His Royal Highness is better today. And another short item. This day, Lady Mildmay, with her usual benevolence, gave a dinner at Shawford House to between 60 and 70 Sunday school children, boys and girls.
Back to the present now, because Noel's got question and answer, my Winchester.
Yes, question and answer is by Gareth Longhurst, head chef at the King Alfred pub in Saxon Road, and he tells us what he thinks of the city. What is your favourite restaurant or cafe? Rick Stein's. From a chef point of view, I really like Chesil Rectory too. What is your favourite pub or bar? Other than the King Alfred, St James's Tavern. It's a proper pub. There's a good community there and there's lots going on. What's your favourite shop? Dingham's. You can get everything you need in there. And what is your favourite building? The Chesil Rectory. You can't help but stop and look at it. What's your favourite view? The view from St Catherine's Hill. Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon? King Alfred, the man and the pub. What is Winchester's best kept secret? The Water Meadows Walk. What is the best thing about Winchester? It's a city, but it has a community feel. And the worst? Lately, it's sad how many independent shops we have. I think he means how few. If there was one thing you could change about Winchester, what would it be? More investment in the high street, not by corporate chains, but by independent shops. There needs to be easier access for them. Describe Winchester in a sentence, a friendly city full of history.
We've got editorial comment, so over to you, Jane.
And this is Holocaust Memorial Day still matters. Some people may feel that Holocaust Memorial Day is something that will become increasingly distant. People who actually survived Nazi concentration camps grow fewer every year, their children grow older, the unprecedented industrial slaughter of millions of people fades into time. Yet the message that the Memorial Day seeks to promote of tolerance to all people is as important today as it ever was, perhaps even more so. The targeting of the Jews by the Nazis started with newspaper articles and cartoons, and then the relentless dehumanisation of a race of people, the Jews, as well as the Gypsies, Slavs, Communists and homosexuals. That paved the way for discriminatory laws, the Yellow Star, arrests, imprisonment, and then the creation of the ghettos before the final solution. Why this still matters is that we are living in an age amplified, if not created, by social media of rudeness and intolerance. The polarisation of Brexit Remain has highlighted it. On both sides, there is the belittling of other people, the doubting of motives, the intense dislike. This is a slippery slope.
Joanna Lewis has written this week's first person, and Deborah's going to read it.
It's entitled Bullying is a Crime. Once upon a time, The world was sweeter than we knew. So sings Frank Sinatra in a song about a lost time. How relevant is that lyric today, as we live through seemingly an epidemic of bullying? Nothing symbolises this more than the hobgoblin that is the former Speaker of the House of Commons. John Bercow has been involved in a row over whether he should be given a seat in the House of Lords because of allegations about his behaviour towards colleagues. The most senior official in the Houses of Parliament has described his rudeness and explosive behaviour as having a terrifying effect on the people working under him. Others claim he gave junior staff nervous breakdowns. He should, out of all good conscience, donate the profits from his forthcoming memoir to a mental health charity and then bow out graciously from public life. Closer to home, I'm hearing about lots of workplace and school bullying of the nastiest kind. Girls as young as six smashing up presents from their former bestie before handing them back, understanding they are bullying. Teenagers texting daily hate through social media, knowing it is bullying. Adults belittling colleagues constantly over a period of years, aware it is bullying. I've learnt one of our state schools in the 11 to 16 bracket seems not to have a grip on the problem. Governors take note, having a stern word and sending out an email to parents is too little too late. A culture of bullying and getting away with it has already taken root. Where are the punishments? Bullying is a crime and should be treated as such. I was bullied for 2 years in the workplace by four women, all of whom were either senior or had control over my working life in some way. It was the worst experience of my life. So bad was it, I became ill and my institution eventually arranged counselling. That's never a quick fix solution, but I learnt so much about people who behave who are insecure, about who I was and why they were able to get away with it. Stopping it involved me fighting back, and believe me, I learnt fast, and I took up kickboxing. But I also saw there was an embedded culture of bullying and misogyny. The situation was not my fault. In some ways, it was not the women's fault either. They had been damaged by working there. They knew they could get away with it. Plus, then there was an unspoken assumption higher up the food chain, as in other work environments, I'm sure, that bullying happens. It was seen as an inevitable result of a competitive environment that gets targets met. Thankfully, views have changed. Now we have the law on our side too. Also, we are more savvy in relation to what bullying constitutes. Yes, we all get made fun of in banter, but when it becomes persistent, nasty, and designed to publicly humiliate, then it is restricting and upsetting, and therefore harmful. Bullies want to create fear in others who witness their acts of verbal aggression, so we all have a duty to stand together against them. Passive-aggressive behaviour is another favourite little tool of these damaged souls. This behind-the-smile, the knife syndrome, is someone pretending to like you or be supportive, but who is actually working subtly to drop you in the proverbial. Also, in workplace or spousal or family bullying, we now know a lot more about what's called gaslighting. This consists of wearing down someone's self-esteem and confidence, being nice, then suddenly horrible, so that the person becomes fully controllable. It is very, very creepy. What I would like to see, where bullying is currently a problem, is the immediate suspension of individuals from that environment, only allowing them to return after they've had counselling. We don't want a new generation of John Bercows, thank you very much.
I was going to read an alternative look at the news because she's got Belgarum Diary.
Three items from Belgarum Diary. First one, High Street's punctuation evolution. In a few hundred years, the apostrophe will probably have gone the way of other grammar anachronisms. It's slowly declining in use and in knowledge of how to use it. Waterstones appear to have given up the struggle. Its new sign at its High Street branch has no apostrophe, but the older sign at the Brooks Centre store still does. The chain is yet to respond to a request for comment. Presumably, when the Brooks store is updated, the mark will also go, and Waterston will join the club to which Boots and Debenhams are members. And the second item, how to tackle office cake culture. Workplace health is no piece of cake, a Winchester researcher's new study into office cake culture has found. Coinciding with Sugar Awareness Week, newly published results from health coach Lou Walker has provided an insight into helping workplaces cut down on sugary snacks. Published in the International Journal of Workplace Health Management, the study was conducted as part of Lou's Master of Science in Obesity and Weight Management. The study explored the behaviours and attitudes of nearly 1,000 UK office workers towards office cake, sugary offerings provided by employees and management for colleagues to share. It found office cake changes employees' eating habits and makes workplace environments less healthy. A key finding was that despite its popularity, 95% of respondents said the ideal frequency for office cake would be once a week or less. The study found cake is eaten whenever it's available, which was at least once or twice a week in 87% of respondents' workplaces and daily in 8%. Over a third, 36% of respondents, said they never refused cake, and over two-thirds, 68%, found it hard to resist to some extent even if they are not hungry or have just eaten a meal. Lou said, office cake often comes from a place of generosity and kindness, which makes it hard for anyone to suggest cutting down. Yet this study suggests many people feel the same way about having cake less often, but no one realises this because no one talks about it. So we need to start a conversation. And finally, evoking a time before gentrification. Anyone who likes looking at old photographs of Winchester cannot fail to be struck by how down at heel it often looked. The city was very much a working place. Even into the 1990s, there were garages and workshops where now there is expensive housing. Parchment Street and St Swithin Street spring to mind. So this photograph of Colebrook Street is evocative. It looks a little uncared for. The hairdresser's has been empty for some time and it needs painting. The utilitarian building next to it has seen better days, and yes, this accompanies a photograph of some very down-at-heel buildings in Winchester.
Now I've got What's On. On February the 3rd and 4th, the comedian Alexei Sale is at the Theatre Royal. For more information or tickets, go to theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk or phone the box office 01962 840 440. On February the 7th and 8th, the Somborne Players present Cinderella at the King's Somborne Village Hall at 7:30, and there's a matinee as well at 2:30 on the Saturday. The tickets, adults £6, children £4, and a family of four, that's two adults and two children, £15. And you can get it from the post office in King's Somborne and Martin's stores. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 31st of January at 7:44 a.m. and it begins at 4:53 p.m. And on Wednesday the 5th of February it ends at 7:36 a.m. and begins at 5:02 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking newspaper and the Winchester Talking magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. And her contact details are on the tag attached to the memory stick. If there's a problem with your Sovereign player, please try plugging it in and recharging it before returning it as faulty. We'll continue with items of general news. Over to you, Jane, for the very first general news item.
And here we have Civic Chiefs Back Pavilion Project. Winchester Civic Chiefs have given crucial backing to a community-inspired project for a new pavilion at a city park. The Pavilion Project, based in Hyde, has raised £205,000 from hundreds of donors towards a replacement for a dilapidated structure at North Walls Recreation Ground. City councillors on the town forum agreed to back £800,000 scheme with a grant of £295,000 to meet a funding shortfall. It means that tenders can now be sought for building work to start this year. Mike Caldwell of the Pavilion Project told the forum, "The new all-year-round pavilion will generate an increase to many thousands of person visitors visits, which in turn will generate increased income. The current pavilion stands unused for a large part of the year and operates at a loss to the City Council. We are confident the new pavilion at the very least will be cost neutral, and as such it should be regarded as an investment rather than an expense." Tim Fell from the project told the forum that currently around 2,200 visit the pavilion annually. The new one would attract 61,000 visits a year and generate an income of £19,000. The meeting heard that a like-for-like replacement of the pavilion would cost £500,000. The £295,000 is from CIL funding developers' contributions. All councillors on the forum, from Conservatives and Liberal Democrats, voted to approve the £295,000 funding, although Councillor Mike Crask had concerns about the business case for the new structure, and Councillor Weir was worried all the CIL money was going to one project. A subgroup of councillors is looking at provision of toilets and cafe once the River Park Leisure Centre closes early next year. The meeting heard the council attention would now focus on the future of the parks in Highcliffe. And this is accompanied by two photographs, one little one of the current pavilion, which looks a bit like a little shed, to the proposed pavilion designed by AR Design, which is of an extremely attractive, very large grey wooden building with three separate wings and an apparently wooden roof and of a rather modern sloping design.
And the next item is called Ambulance Service Opens Doors to Potential Recruits. The Ambulance Service hosted a recruitment open day in Otterbourne on Saturday. South Central Ambulance Service, NHS Foundation Trust, invited job seekers, those returning to work after a career break, or perhaps looking to change careers in 2020, to meet staff and recruitment team to discover the range of clinical and non-clinical vacancies available. It was organised on a drop-in basis and gave people a chance to find out what jobs are currently available, chat to existing staff and employed at SCAS, and discover what it is really like to work for the service. There were opportunities to see live demonstrations, inspect trust vehicles, tour round for clinical coordination and contact centres. And there is a photograph accompanying with five of the crew, one of whom is strapped very firmly into a wheelchair, and they're all looking frightfully cheerful, not looking they're about to rush off to an emergency.
Glass collection rates receive a big boost. Early signs that far more glass is being collected for recycling in the Winchester district. Since the new curbside collection was launched in October, the tonnes collected each month is October 275, November 221. From April to September, the figures were 130, 168, 167, 179, 133 and 133 in September. The rate from September compared to August more than doubled. Councillor Martin Todd, Cabinet Member for Service Delivery and Transformation, said, "There has been a significant and positive impact on the volume of glass collected for recycling since the service started on September the 30th. An extra 50 tonnes of glass has been collected that may otherwise have ended in landfill. The Lib Dems say the success shines a light on the years of wasted opportunity under the Conservative leadership, which blocked curbside collection proposals in 2011. According to estimates by Winchester Lib Dems, the eight-year delay may have prevented 4,800 tonnes from being recycled." Councillor Todd added that although the data was not yet final and audited, it did indicate a significant increase since the curbside collection was introduced. "These initial results are incredibly promising," he said. "We look forward to providing a more robust estimate of the increase in recycling rate as the amounts collected do vary across the year. But already there has been at around an extra 50 tonnes of glass collected for recycling per month." Councillor Paula Ferguson said, "While I'm delighted that glass recycling rates have gone up substantially since curbside glass collection was introduced, I'm shocked just how much extra CO2 has been needlessly released into the atmosphere over the past 8 years, simply because the Conservatives weren't prepared to back Liberal Democrat proposals to introduce curbside collection back in 2011. When the Lib Dems took over the council following the elections last May, the refuse collection service was in crisis with scores of complaints about poor service. Councillor Todd said changes had been made to improve efficiency. Other changes included the use of only Euro 6 compliant vehicles, reducing emissions from collection vehicles, greater use of narrow-bodied vehicles to improve access, particularly in town centres, and a free household collection of small electrical equipment for recycling. Complaints about missed bins fell from 178 in December 2018 to 98 last month, and on recycling had fallen from 118 in December 2018 to 55.
And here we have councillors approve £830,000 revamp of play areas. A six-figure programme of revamping Winchester play areas has been agreed by the town forum. The city councillors, who represent the city wards, have backed an £830,000 five-year programme to improve eight play areas. Council leader Lucille Thompson told the town forum, "I think our play areas is something Winchester does really well." Councillor Jamie Scott praised the MUGA, multi-use games area, in Lower Stanmore and said similar MUGAs should be provided elsewhere. This year, the two areas to benefit will be Abbey Gardens, complete refurbishment, £120,000, and Thurman Crescent Stanmore, replacement of toddler equipment, £40,000. Abbey Gardens was opened in 1993 with a partial refurbishment in 2002. The full programme is 2021-22, King George V play area and skate park, Highcliffe, £200,000. North Walls Rec, complete refurbishment, £150,000. 2020-23, Imber Road Winnell, partial refurbishment, £40,000. 2023-24, Chandler Road, Abbots Barton, complete refurbishment, £80,000. And 2024-25, Walpole Road, Stanmore, complete refurbishment, £80,000, and Dean Park, Wheat, complete, £120,000. And this is accompanied by the new play area at Gordon Avenue, Highcliffe, with children from All Saints Preschool, and there's a little cluster of children in their yellow jackets climbing up a sort of rope tunnel to a wooden castle, and underneath a little boy on a little wooden train with all sorts of twisting knobs and buttons, and in the background an older child on a swing in their play area.
Museum Job Partnership celebrated by university. A partnership creating unique job opportunities for young graduates has been celebrated. For the past 4 years, Portsmouth Mary Rose has teamed up with the University of Winchester to offer placements at a time when employment in the arts, culture and heritage industries can be difficult. The University of Winchester funds a graduate educator to work at the Mary Rose for 7 months after they leave university, which is said to be a mutually beneficial partnership that has seen a number of young people thrive in educational and charitable roles. Mary Kinulty, head of learning at the Mary Rose, said, "We are very proud of our groundbreaking partnership with the University of Winchester. The graduates who are supported by the university in their placements with the Mary Rose Learning Development have been a wonderful asset to the museum team. It's a great privilege to help these talented graduates to develop a range of workshops, workspace skills, which will be invaluable in their early career progression. It is gratifying to see the University of Winchester graduate educators go from strength to strength as they take their next career steps. Charlotte Bailey and Tom Buckenmayer are two Winchester graduates who have benefited hugely from the partnership. Charlotte is the most recent graduate educator to take part in the scheme after she graduated with a degree in forensic studies. After finishing her degree, she said she never expected to be part of the Mary Rose crew. She continued, "The team are truly wonderful and encourage you to pursue your interests and ideas. I have unexpectedly gravitated towards the business and marketing aspects of the role, which I really enjoy. With my science background, I'm currently working on promoting cross-curricular school visits where school, science and history can both be explored. This includes running an exclusive workshop offer for Science Week, where students can explore the science behind the Mary Rose story." Tom Buckenmayer, who now works at the museum, described his experience as a perfect start after being in full-time education. He added, "I learnt so much about the work that goes on at the museum, as well as gaining a real insight as to how a business runs. Towards the end of my internship, I was fortunate enough to be offered a permanent position at the museum. I'm now 3 months into my new roles, and the variety of jobs keeps it all very interesting. Without this opportunity, it would be very hard to get into this area of business. The partnership has allowed me to jumpstart to a career in the heritage sector, and I am grateful to both the Mary Rose and the University of Winchester. I would not have got this far without them." Professor Joy Carter, Vice Chancellor of the University, is equally positive about the partnership, adding, "Our fantastic partnership with the Mary Rose is hugely important to us, and the benefits to both institutions are enormous. The museum offers our students and graduates work placements and internships, giving them valuable experience as they prepare to embark on their professional careers. We are passionate about equipping our students with the skills and experience they need to progress after they graduate, and this is made possible with the support of the museum and other local employers." And there is a photograph of Charlotte Bailey dressed up in a sort of Tudor costume and looking extremely cheerful, as if she's about to dance off into the sunset.
Tea and togetherness in bid to confront loneliness. People in Winchester who may be feeling lonely this winter are invited to join free monthly get-togethers featuring gentle company and conversation. Abbots Barton and St Catherine's View are among 21 Colton care homes starting the Tea and Togetherness gatherings from this month. They're part of a long-standing bid by the family-owned provider to help confront community loneliness. The move follows the success of a similar monthly get-together which began last summer at Colton's Bourneview home in Poole. It has continued to grow in popularity with more and more people from the community attending. Regular visitor Margaret Howell says, "It's fantastic. You're always made so welcome and I'm meeting people I haven't seen for years. It's a happy, friendly experience each time. I never expected to be coming into a care home and enjoying this level of companionship. I mark it in my diary every month so I can make sure to avoid anything else that might come up. I'm definitely planning to come all through 2020. Margaret has already struck up a friendship with fellow visitor Sue Turner, who said, "I would encourage anyone living on their own or who's feeling lonely to come along. So many elderly people live away from their families and are not speaking much with neighbours. In contrast, these get-togethers are wonderful, just the best thing. They can get you out of the house, help keep your brain active, and you can even have a dance if you want the exercise. The whole atmosphere is friendly. It's an occasion full of smiles and lovely people." And this is accompanied by a picture of two lovely people, a couple, all smiles, toasting each other with teacups.
And here we have Action Plan on City Air Quality. Council chiefs have been criticised over a report investigating city air quality. Winchester City Council cabinet members were presented with a plan to take action on the issue within the centre. Data shows that more areas of central Winchester are improving and meeting national standards for nitrogen dioxide, NO2, an environmental pollutant. Several of the main routes in and out of the city centre, such as Andover Road, Cheswell Street, St Cross Road and Alsford Road, which have historically exceeded legal limits for NO2, are now showing compliance according to monitoring in 2019. During the meeting, an update on the plan was given to promote greener and cleaner ways to travel. However, the Cabinet was told that more work is needed when it comes to Romsey Road. Despite the achievements, Conservative opposition councillor Frank Pearson aired concerns with councillor Jackie Porter, member of Built Environment and Wellbeing. Councillor Pearson said, "Unfortunately, I can't say that it goes far enough. What it is accurate and it is very pleasing and it is a very useful piece of information. But as the paper says, if we have to adopt WHO, that's World Health Organization standards of 25 micrograms per kilometre, we've got problems." The WHO is expected to set a mandatory level for nitrogen dioxide emissions. He continued, "At present, at most of the recording points, we record for NO2, we are approaching the level where we can be satisfied that the monitoring has illustrated that the changes of technology in vehicles is actually improving air quality as far as vehicles are concerned." Councillor Porter responded, stating that the council were looking at pollution from houses, particularly in the air quality management area, parts of the centre which focused on reducing air pollution levels, but she added that she was aware that this was an issue right across the district. And it is accompanied by a picture of the congested traffic on the Romsey Road with lines of traffic coming to a halt both in and out of the city, polluting the area along the Romsey Road.
The Henry Beaufort School says it is thrilled to be able to roll out a new initiative to its students. HBX will offer a number of experiences for students, including a residential experience, an adventurous activity, meeting a person that will widen their knowledge of the world we live in, and visiting a place of culture. Through the HBX initiative, students will also be actively encouraged to help others by contributing to charity, voluntary work or a community-based project. HBX will create opportunities for students to set themselves new goals, to share new experiences with friends and to make them feel proud of their achievements. Henry Beaufort says, "We're extremely ambitious for our students and believe that learning in an environment outside the classroom has the potential to change lives. All students should be exposed to opportunities and experiences beyond the classroom. We believe these opportunities and experiences will help students to broaden their horizons, challenge them personally, build confidence, develop skills for the future, and make our students feel happier." Helen Briggs, head of Year 9 and the member of staff responsible for this initiative programme, said, "Our students will be offered these opportunities and experiences through many strands of our curriculum, including extracurricular activities, enrichment week, residential trips, personal development days, and cultural capital days organised by the school. We will track and monitor all opportunities and experiences that students participate in through our HBX initiative, and are very excited to see how our students benefit."
Southern Health is now rated as good. A trust which provides health services for people with mental health issues and learning disability has been rated good. The Care and Quality Commission has judged Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust as good, the second highest rate. The news comes as last year Watchdog said the trust required improvements and follows the tenure of Katrina Percy, in which the trust was subjected to widespread criticism over the deaths of patients. In their latest report, inspectors said that action to improve the service has been taken and highlighted what we'll have to improve further. As previously reported, Southern Health runs acute wards and psychiatric intensive care units in Hampshire, including the Antelope House in Southampton and Melbury Lodge in Winchester. Watchdog said the trust is well-led, safe, caring and responsive, all elements which were rated as good, but they said the effectiveness of the services requires improvement. In their latest report, inspectors said, "We found that the trust has a highly skilled, strong, stable and experienced senior team. The leadership team had taken significant steps to improve the culture across the trust, and this was paying dividends. Staff across the trust felt valued, but there was a real focus on doing what was best for people. The leadership team had engaged proactively with a number of families who had previously not received the appropriate level of care. All in the trust had worked hard to address most of the concerns we raised in the last inspection." Watchdog said improvements must be made in wards for older people with mental health problems by ensuring that all patients have access to a clinical psychologist and psychological therapies, that female lounges were not used by male patients, and that there is a patient alarm system on all older persons' wards. Inspectors also said the trust must ensure consistency in the disposal of clinical waste in line with their policy. Dr. Kevin Cleary, GCQC's Deputy Chief Inspector of Hospitals, said, "At Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust, our inspectors found a really strong patient-centred culture. Inspectors saw many areas of good practice. The trust did face some challenges, and there are still some areas of improvement required, but there has been significant improvement in the services at this trust." Trust Chief Executive Dr. Nick Broughton said, "I am very encouraged by the report published today. It reflects the significant strides we have made to improve the quality and safety of all services. It also highlights how hard we have worked to ensure that we better involve families and carers in the care of our patients and service users." And this is accompanied by a picture of Dr. Nick Broughton looking extremely pleased.
And here we have, report does not go far enough, says Wildlife Trust. The new Climate Committee report doesn't go far enough to show the potential for natural solutions to the climate and ecological crisis, says Hampshire and the Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust. The two counties are home to swathes of land with great potential to lock away carbon and other greenhouse gases, and at the same time create a multitude of benefits for people and wildlife. The Trust says it welcomes the conclusion of the Committee on Climate Change, that's CCC, that a radical shift in land use is needed to tackle the climate breakdown. The report fails, however, to recognise the full potential of our local habitats to contribute to reaching net zero emissions. Debbie Tan, Trust Chief Executive, said, "Restoring nature is our best bet for tackling both the devastating loss of wildlife locally and the climate crisis we are facing. But it's not just planting trees we're talking about, though that obviously has its place. Turning intensive arable fields back into flower-rich grassland, restoring wetlands and, importantly, investing in reviving our incredible local coastal and marine habitats like salt marsh and seagrass must all be part of the plan now. We need more ambition and more radical rethink of how we use our space on land and at sea for the benefit of everyone and for the future. The Trust is pioneering work to radically increase the space for nature and restore natural habitats and processes. Vital local habitats include, firstly, native woodland. Since the 1930s, over half of Hampshire's ancient woodland has been destroyed, but this natural habitat can absorb up to 400 tonnes of carbon per square kilometre. Trees are a shelter to so many bird, insect and mammal species and also help to reduce flood risk. It isn't just about tree planting. Letting native woodland expand and grow from wild scrubland can be cheaper and the trees can be more resilient to drought and disease. secondly, grasslands. It is crucially important to understand the varied mosaic of carbon-absorbing environments needed for net zero. In many places, instead of trees, carbon-sucking wild grasslands are far more appropriate. Just one 160-acre wildflower meadow like Winnell Moors could offset 1,000 Southampton to Newcastle flights every year. As changing climate makes extreme local weather more likely, grassland can also prevent disasters like the devastating 2014 River Itchen and Test floods by holding five times more water than intensively managed and ploughed farmland. And thirdly, peatlands. The CCC report specifically calls for the restoration of peatland as a major carbon sink. Peat can absorb carbon for thousands of years, but 94% of UK peatland has been damaged, dried out and destroyed, which causes carbon to be released.
And this article is on the vexed subject of dustbin collections. A troubled waste collection company, which received a high number of complaints, has been awarded a new contract worth more than £4.5 million a year. Winchester City Council has given Biffa an 8-year contract for household waste collections, claiming that the firm's bid provided the best value for money, along with including a package of service improvements. The duration of the contract is for an initial 8 years, with the option to extend for a further 8. Over the course of 16 years, its total value was put at £75 million, according to a government procurement website. It follows a string of complaints from residents after a backlog of rubbish in a number of areas across Winchester and East Hampshire. Biffa had also experienced vehicle breakdowns because of its ageing fleet and problems with staff retention and high sickness rates. The company had been using a high number of agency staff who were unfamiliar with the rounds. Despite the raft of issues, council chiefs have said that is committed to working with Biffa to ensure collections are carried out on time across the district and to reduce the number of missed bins. Councillor Martin Todd, Cabinet Member for Service Quality and Transformation, said, "A big priority for our bin service has been to recycle more and cut the number of missed bins. And Biffa and the people working for Biffa have been really good partners in making that happen. While we won't be happy until no bins are missed, the latest figures show we've made really good progress, much better than the same time last year. And we've got plans to improve the service even further." Biffa won the new contract after a rigorous tender process that ranked builders by bidders by value and quality standards.
Inside the night shelter. More than 100 people took the chance to see Winchester Church's night shelter when it opened its doors to the public. People were eager to see inside and find out more about how the charity is supporting people experiencing homelessness. Michelle Price, chief executive, said, "We work quietly behind the scenes 365 days a year to help vulnerable individuals experiencing homelessness. Our open day is an opportunity for us to share more information about the invaluable work we are doing and to give people a chance to look around and also to ask questions. Many people were surprised to discover that our residents stay months rather than weeks as we support them to make steps towards stability. Lots of visitors left reassured that such positive work is being done and inspired to help in some way in the future." The event attracted visitors of all ages with a quiz trail around the night shelter for children. Brothers Riley and Austin admitted that they were apprehensive about coming to the event. "We were a bit scared, but it's really different to how we expected. We're surprised by how many meals are served, 12,675. It was really interesting to see inside." As well as touring the facilities, visitors were able to chat to former residents, staff and volunteers. Many expressed an interest in volunteering at the night shelter and signed up to attend the next induction session for volunteers. Winchester Church's night shelter has been supporting people experiencing homelessness for over 30 years and provided essential accommodation to 92 people from April 2018 to April 2019. As well as being a safe place to stay, the night shelter gives one-to-one support to each resident. Ways to help the night shelter through volunteering and donations can be found on the charity's website.
And now we have inspiring art installation. Hundreds of people have been inspired by the themes of pilgrimage and coffee to take part in a unique community art installation. Pilgrim Grounds has seen the creation of a giant labyrinth in the nave of Winchester Cathedral from used coffee grounds and other coffee-related sustainable materials. Artistic director of the project, Jill Sacchini, said, "We've had a lot of participation from local schools and schools further afield up near Basingstoke, with children making their tiles at home and bringing them in. A lot of the young people coming in are from different backgrounds, and we had a lot of people interested in what it is. As 2020 is the year of pilgrimage, it is hoped that the project will be a creative opening for the year-long event. We wanted to be kicking that theme off quite quickly," Reverend Sacchini said. "Last night, the labyrinth was completed and for the first time, people were able to walk the maze. As part of the installation, coffee shops participated by saving their coffee grounds, with King's School using the excess to make the paper that has been used." And this is accompanied by a very interesting photograph, which is quite difficult to describe. It's inside the nave of the cathedral, and on the huge stone slabs on the floor, there are great sheets of cardboard, on top of which, well, there's the Reverend Jill Sacchini, there is a maze created out of little squares of paper, presumably made by King's School, and on each little square there is a pattern, some of them just a blob of coffee grounds, others the coffee grounds shaped into a flower or a star or something like that, so that the whole thing creates a maze through which you can presumably walk in some way.
Whether you pronounce it Magdalen or Magdalen, I've got a photograph here of the historic lodge at the gates to the cemetery. New uses are to be found for the currently underused historic building at Winchester's main cemetery. The town forum has agreed to spend £23,000 on renovating the late Victorian cemetery lodge at Magdalen Hill Cemetery off Alsred Road near Mourne Hill. The building has been largely unused since it ceased being a home following the retirement of the cemetery manager about 18 months ago. His replacement is part-time and does not need to live on site. To maximise income, the City Council plans to have one of the upstairs rooms used as a staff office and to rent some parts downstairs to a stonemason and the Butterfly Conservation Group, which runs the adjacent Magdalen Down Nature Reserve. A strict covenant exists controlling the use of the lodge to things related to funerals and burials, but the Church of England Commissioner has indicated that there is no objection to the Butterfly charity using the room, according to a report that went to the Town Forum last Thursday.
Chaos after train derailed. Train passengers faced major disruption earlier this week after a freight train derailed. The large freight train derailed from the tracks at Eastleigh Station on Tuesday morning, and commuters faced long delays and cancellations. On Wednesday, queues stretched outside Winchester Station as passengers waited for replacement buses. Following the incident, Network Rail launched an investigation to find out the cause of the derailment, in which no one was injured. A spokesperson said that staff worked to remove the carriages on Tuesday night, and it was expected that the damaged track would later be repaired, with journeys due to return to normal today. That's on Thursday. Speaking of the incident, ex-railway worker Derek Everson, 53, said, "I was walking on the road outside the station and saw that as it pulled away from the station normally, and all of a sudden it started to come off the track. Three wagons derailed, the sound was horrendous, and there was lots of smoke. The driver did well to stop and control it, but now so many trains are cancelled because the lines are closed. Someone told me the train hit the electrical rail and it jumped up, but I don't know if that's true. And this is accompanied by a picture of the front of Winchester Station with hundreds of people all standing around looking a bit aimless in queues.
And now warnings over the coronavirus threat. Students and staff at Winchester's universities have been advised to follow precautions to protect against the spread of the coronavirus. The University of Southampton, which runs the Winchester School of Art, has begun advising its faculty and students as a number headed home for the Chinese New Year. It comes as the death toll in China rises well above 100, and in the UK Public Health England has said at least 100 people have been tested as of Wednesday. A spokesperson for the university said, "We are advising staff or students travelling to or from affected areas to keep checking the Public Health England and Foreign and Commonwealth Office webpages for the most up-to-date advice and information on how they can take precautions. We will continue to monitor this situation closely, and we will continue to take note of any other guidance from PHE and other health authorities." And the same precautions are being followed by those at the University of Winchester. A spokesperson said, "The university is closely monitoring the coronavirus outbreak as it unfolds, and the health and safety of our students and staff are of paramount importance. In line with advice from the university's Health and Safety Association, we have emailed information and advice, including good hand and respiratory hygiene, to all university first aiders. We are also keeping staff and students informed via an intranet." Elsewhere, the University of Chester has warned students thinking of heading home for the Chinese New Year that they will face quarantine before being readmitted. Vice-Chancellor's Group Universities UK said, "Ensuring the safety and welfare of their students is a top priority for UK universities." Following the outbreak, British Airways has suspended all direct flights to China after the government urged people not to travel to the country. All flights have been suspended until 3rd of February, with a spokesman saying the airline is urgently assessing the situation. And this is accompanied by a photograph of a large group of students who are mostly wearing the protective masks as the coronavirus spreads.
Bluebird Care staff celebrate their outstanding achievement. Bluebird Care in Stockbridge has achieved a double outstanding rating after the Care Quality Commission graded them as overall outstanding for a second time running. Major expansion plans are in place, which sees 50 new jobs in the Stockbridge and Test Valley areas. The positions are now open for local people to begin a career in care. Bluebird Care became the first and only care in your own home provider in the Test Valley to ever be rated as outstanding after their first CQC inspection in 2017, and have retained this status. Taryn Ridey, registered manager of Bluebird Care, said, "Our outstanding rating reflects our team's dedication to the Stockbridge and Test Valley community."
Fire safety warning. Firefighters issued a warning to a homeowner after smoking materials caused a fire at a block of flats in Winchester. Crews from Winchester and Eastleigh were called to Octavia Hill, Stanmore, where one of the first four flats was alight at 4:48 p.m. on Monday. A service spokesperson said that a small fire had broken out involving a worktop and smoking materials in the kitchen. The property owner had left the flat before the fire crews arrived. Firefighters have fitted additional smoke alarms to the property, and advice was given to the owner, the spokesperson added.
And here, concern of pigeons on the Buttercross. Winchester's flying rats were once in the sights at the city's town forum. Ian Tate, a former city councillor, raised the problem when speaking about the state of the historic Buttercross. Mr Tate told the forum, "Part of the problem with the Buttercross is excrement from pigeons. Having lived in Winchester all my life, the number of pigeons today is significantly higher than ever in my lifetime. I'm not anti-bird, but pigeons bring disease. On the Buttercross, that is an ongoing issue, particularly when children climb up the steps. Forum chairman said the issue was being addressed and officers had met representatives of Historic England to discuss the Buttercross. And this is accompanied by a picture of the Buttercross with a cluster of pigeons sitting rather comfortably all around it. It was a rather nice spot to see if anybody's eating sandwiches, I think.
Craig, that's all we've got time for this week. That's the week ending the 31st of January 2020. Thank you to our editors, Sonia Phillips, Jane Pickard and Sheila Shepherd. And thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks, of course, to our readers, Deborah Cranmer.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And goodbye for now from me, Roy Faithful. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you for listening. Goodbye again.